don't have to worry about what is worse or what is best. Just
all right. Hello and welcome to the Let Me Be Frank podcast, brought to you by Peter Carey and Sam Nolan, filling in here for Brian Franklin, who for the first time in I think almost 2 years is not on the pod that bears his name. Sam, how you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Hope we can manage it without Brian and we're not wandering around like lost puppies.
Yeah, well, I'll try to keep this on track. I've never been the one to do that, but I'll give it a shot. All right. First topic we're hitting here. March Madness Final Four. The games weren't exactly compelling, but I'll let you speak on them as well. Loyola, Michigan. Michigan ended up winning 69-57. Loyola ended up blowing a huge first-half lead. Not huge, I guess.
Yeah.
But
They're up 7.5, but yeah, they fell apart pretty quickly there in the second half.
What do you think was the downfall of Loyola in the second half there?
As simple as it seems and as like dumb as it seems, like this is kind of a Mark Titus, Tate Frazier bit, but they just like stopped hitting shots. And to win games, you got to hit shots. And also, Krutwig, their big guy in the middle, who walks around, runs around like an ogre, just is not even close to the same level that Mo Wagner is. Mo Wagner isn't all that big on defense, but Krutwig was getting 3 and 4 foot looks that just flat out weren't falling.
Yeah, and I've actually heard that guy, that he lost 30 pounds from the start of the season, so I can't even imagine what he looked like as an incoming freshman. Like a lineman. And I've been on that opposite end of being the slow dude guarding someone way faster than you. It's not a fun experience.
Exactly, yeah.
And yeah, Wagner just had his way in the second half. Also, I don't know if you can comment on this, but I've been seeing a lot of tweets that Sister Jean supposedly left early, but according to all reports coming from Loyola, they contradicted that and said that Sister Jean was just wheeled to her position to be able to have the players embrace her after the game. Do you buy it?
Well, there is video proof, so it's tough to go fake news on that one. But my belief is that no matter what, if you're at a sporting event, you stay and watch to the bitter end, no matter how great, how terrible it is, for how big a deal that the media has made her up to be and she has made herself up to be, you'd think that she could wait till the buzzer hits, the Michigan celebrates, Loyola kind of hangs out for a bit, and then they head back to the locker room. So, I don't know, not telling a 98-year-old woman how to live her life, and she obviously was wheeled there by somebody, so it may not have even been her decision. But
who even knows that she wanted to go to any of these games?
Right, she could have been kidnapped, like, and kind of said, "Hey, you're our talking piece. We need a story here." An 11 seed apparently isn't enough to get press attention because CBS was still sticking them in the early game, thinking that nobody was going to want to watch them or just watch them in general play. So they created this media maven that grabbed headline after headline.
And you know, the more I think about it, the selfish thing that Sister Jean could have done, being that it was Easter weekend and Loyola is a Catholic university, yeah. Or is it Jesuit Catholic?
It's Jesuit, yeah.
Jesuit yeah, university. She could have staged her death on Friday, much like Christ.
Yeah.
Let the Loyola players play Saturday with the thought in the back of their minds that Sister Jean did die and they were playing for her, and then rise on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, like Jesus is assumed to be the Son of God, but who are we to assume his gender? It's 2018 after all. So Jesus reincarnate Sister Jean.
Who are we to assume that Jesus didn't come back to earth as a 98-year-old white lady?
Exactly, exactly. In America, of course, because Jesus was definitely born and raised in the grand old U.S. of A.
Jesus was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white man. Exactly. Who just happened to live in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Last question on Loyola here before we get off track. Chances that Moser stays with Loyola as head coach?
I'd say so, at least not right away, because we've kind of seen with Shaka Smart, especially at Texas, after that 2011 VCU run, that just because a guy had and Shaka Smart had put a few good seasons together before that. But for a guy to go take an 11 seed to the Final Four, he becomes the next like hot thing on the block. And to me, it just like he got lucky enough to make a run and lucky enough that they didn't have to play Virginia and lucky enough that they didn't have to play Kentucky even, that they just kind of waltzed into the Final Four. Porter Moser, Creighton grad, I don't want to talk bad about him, but...
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he went to Creighton.
God bless.
Yeah, and so the whole Jesuit school tie thing there. And quick aside, I was sick and tired of people telling me that I had to cheer for Loyola just because it was like Jesuit schools like looking out for each other because Creighton's also Jesuit. Like, I've never known anybody to go to Loyola. It's an awesome story. I've got friends at Michigan. So I was not cheering for one or the other, but I was a very staunch, neutral observer.
You're less a man of the faith.
Yes, exactly. I didn't want to kind of do that. But yeah, Porter Moser, I'm sure he'll get some phone calls. He said that he likes his gig there, and why not? Like, you get that school to the Final Four. It doesn't matter if you win 10 games for the next 15 years, you're going to be looked at as like a god basically on campus. So yeah, he'll get calls. His record before this hasn't been great. So he shouldn't get a D1 job, but he may be offered them just because that's kind of the nature of the business.
Yeah. And it's kind of a good point that he'll be like a gem, looked at as a gem, for like the next few years at least, because the ADs are going to remember that run for a long time, and he can just wait to the job he wants.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, all right, we'll see then. All right, moving on to Nova, Kansas, other Final Four game. Wasn't much of a game at all. Nova shot, 60% from three the first half, ended up winning 95-79. Had a NCAA record, 18 three-pointers during the game. It's kind of crazy to see that Kansas didn't have a chance the entire time, it seemed like. I don't know, like, that was from my perspective. What do you think?
But yeah, Villanova put them away very quickly. And it was kind of, not to keep bringing up Creighton, which was the last team to beat Villanova, by the way.
Sam, you're fulfilling Brian's role of bringing up your alma mater, because he finds a way to bring up Seton Hall every time anyway.
Oh, 100%. So. Well, and Raftery he gave two shout-outs to Seton Hall last night during the national championship.
Of course, Brian's mentor, Bill Raftery.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. But Villanova, Creighton's used to getting out to leads, and then of course they'll inevitably blow those leads and have to fight back. Villanova just got out to a lead. Kansas went on a bit of a run to get the game to what, like 22-11. They're like, oh, the spread's only 11 now or whatever. And then like Villanova just puts them away like very early. Like the score, what, 95-79, it didn't even ever feel that close. Jalen Brunson flat out outplayed Devontae Graham, who was a lot of people's – he was a Big 12 player of the year, and a lot of people's not necessarily a dark horse, but if it's not going to go to Brunson, who's going to go to Devontae Graham, senior at Kansas? So Rock Chalk is no more, and Bill Self really overachieved with one of his so-called worst teams, but – How bad can teams really be when you've got 14 Big 12 titles? So great job to Kansas. I've had family members go to Kansas. I've been to a game at Allen Fieldhouse. That was awesome. But it just wasn't meant to be this year just because Villanova is that damn good.
Yeah, I feel like Bill Self did a great branding job this year, just saying that they tempered expectations for essentially no reason. They seemed to have as much talent as other years, but it didn't seem like anyone was expecting them to make it.
Yeah, exactly, because he's a perennial Elite Eight flameout kind of, and just to even get to the Final Four was probably all that he needed to kind of like stop the jokes flying his way, at least for another year or two.
Yeah, he mailed it in after he got that. He punched that Final Four ticket.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on to the national championship game, again, Villanova just shot them out of the building, specifically Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah, that was – go ahead.
Just saying that Dante scored 18 first-half points, finished with 31. And also had a handful of problematic tweets come up.
Yeah, get unearthed from 2011 and 2012, which will make us both feel old, but he was like 15 then. So, and that would have been my like sophomore, junior year in high school or something like that. So it was, we discussed this in the Let Me Be Frank group me, of course, but like at what point do you not just like, you got to know that stuff's out there. And like, before he deleted his Twitter, which has now been done, like his last tweet was in like 2016. So if you're just not going to use it, flat out delete it.
I'm glad. I mean, it's common sense, yes, but I'm glad it still happens.
Yeah, exactly. Like any big moment, like you can't like, and the best thing is like the internet's freaking out about it. He has no clue what's going on until half an hour after the game, after celebrating. And all of a sudden the highest of highs become the lowest of lows. And he's like, oh God, what did I do? What did my idiot friends when we were 14, 15 years old do on my Twitter?
Yeah. And I was shocked. It was pretty obvious that like half of those ones came from someone else tweeting from his account. What kind of psychopath doesn't delete those tweets?
Right. Like you just have to like there's, he definitely knows those are there. Like if somebody found out your Facebook password in middle school or whatever you said, like you'd make a Facebook status. Oh, I'm a fat ass. Like I'm a blah, blah, blah. Basically word for word, what those tweets ended up being. So I don't know. That's just wild.
Yeah. It was always entertaining seeing a ginger white guy just absolutely get up.
Right.
Like he throw it down.
Yeah. I won't go as far as to say as he was the most athletic player on the floor, but he sure looked like it at points. So scoring 31 points on 10 of 15 shooting. We'll kind of stop talking about Twitter and start talking about the game now a bit, but that run from Villanova is one of the more dominant tournament runs I've ever seen maybe. And in recent memory, at least, they won every game by 12 points. Obviously no game was ever close. The closest game I think was the Texas Tech game, which they kind of kept the Red Raiders at an arm's reach. Some of the stats that we'll get into later remind me of like Jake Arrieta 2015 second half stats, or like Tony Gwynn stats, where you just kind of have to look like Tony Gwynn hitting stats that make the rounds on Twitter every few months or so that just like make you shake your head and go like, wow, that team was really good. And in a year that apparently there were no great dominant college basketball teams, not even all that quietly, Villanova only lost what, four games. Two of those games were without Phil Booth. One of those was to St. John's, who for whatever reason was the hottest team in the country after beating Villanova and Duke in a two-game span. But like, I don't know, the Wildcats and Jay Wright, how quickly the tables have turned for him, being a second weekend flame out, getting upset all the time, to now he has two championships in 3 years. It's unreal.
Yeah, and Michigan put up their best fight, I think, in the first half especially. Mo Wagner was putting up points pretty easily in the first half. But I just think Villanova's too talented, too well-coached, and they just executed well. And I think that was just the combination of those three, just the difference of John Beilein's team, who was additionally also well-coached but just didn't have the personnel to get it done against Nova.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Duncan Robinson's an awesome story, but when you're trotting out a former Division III player against a team that has just laid waste to everybody, basically, I think they're average margin of victory since that Creighton game is like 20.4 points or something crazy like that. And Jalen Brunson went like 4 of 13. He hit the first two baskets and then was kind of quiet all night and in foul trouble. And they still just absolutely dominated Michigan. And I do have a question. This may be kind of a floating it out there. Just anybody listening along with you, Pete, kind of being a Creighton homer a bit. If Jalen Brunson comes back and plays like we know he can, is that what it would take to unseat Doug McDermott as the best college player in the new Big East? Or is he already there? I obviously think 3,150 career points for Doug McDermott, even though one of those years was in the Big East, one of the most historic college careers ever, keeps him firmly ahead of there. But if Jalen Brunson comes back, wins another title, wins another National Player of the Year award, which is a question whether he'll even stay or go, I don't know, just something for people to think about.
I'll pan it to you. I'll keep it with Doug for right now. And I'll give him the added bonus that he had to play under his father for his entire college career, which is a stressful situation.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So to be able to endure that kind of stress and deal with your dad on a day-to-day basis, I'll still hand it to Doug.
Fair enough. That's what I like to hear.
But with Jalen, I actually thought that him being 4 of 13 and just being basically a game manager and having no issue with it, not forcing any shots.
Yeah.
Was just a great show of poise by him to be able to run this offense and just be a good, effective point guard at running their system.
Yeah, well, yeah, when you can shoot it out to Spellman, who can drain threes, we can shoot it out to DiVincenzo, who was on absolute fire, when you can shoot it out to Mikal Bridges, who is probably even better than Jalen Brunson, and Pascal, who had a few power slams and is just a big body who can also shoot. If Jay Wright designed it beautifully, where if Jalen Brunson's having an off night, or if anybody's having an off night, Phil Booth will step up too. They can afford off nights and still blow the pants off teams, which is unreal.
Yep. And what do you think of the one shining moment montage?
To kind of help Brian, Seton Hall wasn't in there, which didn't make any sense because they had their first tournament win since 1993 or something like that.
A very long time.
Yes. That was crazy. And like the people that always complain about what's in, what's out, what should have made it, like all this stuff, like nothing really notable to me. Enjoy it, basically. Don't complain about it. It's not to kind of be all this multinational corporation, be on their side, but the fact that whoever over at CBS is putting that together in the 15 minutes after the game ends is pretty darn incredible. And it's just an awesome video that I have little issue with, really.
Yeah. I honestly forgot about it this year. And then I watched it this morning. I get chills every time I watch that video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause those are just clips that I dreamed of as a kid is like being a part of.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially on top of that, hearing Luther Vandross's velvety voice.
Yeah. Well, and that I knew it. As soon as it kind of picked up steam and went viral, as soon as the UMBC guy was like, "Oh, it's like winning in Fortnite," I was like, "Okay, that's going to one shining moment." And like, there's nothing anybody can do about it. And I like my roommate's upstairs playing it right now, of course. But I don't know that I'd have to imagine anybody over the age of 30 who was watching that had no idea what was going on, as with many things that pick up steam on the internet nowadays.
Yeah, and that quote made me feel really old, since I've told Brian before and on this podcast, I don't play Fortnite because I'm too cheap to buy Xbox Live right now because I have bills to pay. Yeah. But it's making me feel out of the loop too. But hopping over to another team that won a championship in 2016, the Chicago, yeah, see, I'm a pro at doing these swings. Brian's going to appreciate that one. Moving over to the MLB. The Chicago Cubs are currently 2-3 as we speak. This is Tuesday night. And they were shut out for 18 consecutive innings, I want to say. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Haven't scored a run in 18 innings against what, for all intents and purposes, are AAA pitching staffs in the Marlins and the Reds. So, great.
And they also struck out an MLB record 58 times through five games, which, to be fair, they've played the equivalent of six games. So we'll give them a little bit of a pass, but Schwarber and Ian Happ are still striking out like every other at bat. So
Well, Ian Happ only has one hit since that leadoff homer. So he'll have to figure stuff out. But what Joe Maddon does, and obviously it's nice to have more weapons than less, but all like the lineup tinkering, especially earlier in the season, is kind of frustrating to watch, and especially when the bats are struggling. New hitting coach, Chili Davis. The bats are kind of living up to his name for whatever reason. But again, like any early season baseball woes are kind of rapid overreactions because there's, 150-some-odd games left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just appreciate that the Cubs struggling a bit while the White Sox on the other side of town are just absolutely raking.
Right. Still undefeated on American soil, right?
This is true. And Matt Davidson hitting three home runs, becoming one of, I think, four players ever to hit three homers on opening day. Yeah. And I was – that's my favorite thing is seeing an MLB, like, fun, like stat come out saying that – it's you're never the first person to do something in baseball. It's always
exactly.
Even if it's something absolutely outrageous, you're like the first since 1913
that
Whitey Boggs did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, obviously, baseball is a game that's like people have kept score in for hundreds of years or since its inception, really. But like, I'd be interested to see like where those stats live. So like pre like 1920 stuff, like they could have, you could make up whatever you wanted to write in the newspaper basically and just say, oh yeah, this guy had a trip. He had three triples and struck out twice in a 12 inning game or whatever. And nobody could ever fact check you.
Yeah, absolutely not. And I'm sure some of the players were doctoring the box scores after games anyways.
Oh, definitely.
Well, yeah, MLB is up and running now. This is the season for postponed games due to snow, which I always appreciate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the March 28th, March 29th start date, like, I understand having to fit 162 games in and, like, TV schedules and stuff, but, like, what's wrong with April? Like you're infringing upon like the Final Four. Wait till the Final Four is over. Have opening day the very next day. Great weekend, 2 days for sports. But I'm just happy the baseball's back.
Yeah. And then moving over to the NFL here, one storyline, the Patriots as of Tuesday night have traded Brandon Cooks and their fourth round pick to the LA Rams for the 23rd pick in the first round this year and a sixth rounder. So the tradition continues. The Patriots wide receiving core continues to get white.
Yep.
After the loss of Danny Amendola, they had to even out the ratio, and Cooks is now gone. And again, Belichick making moves for the draft. I trust anything he's going to do for this pick. I'm sure he's going to turn into an all-star. Pro Bowler, all-star, Jesus.
Yeah. It'll be somebody out of, like, the Mountain West who was, like – a dark horse first round pick maybe, and then they'll turn into an all pro. Like it's tiring at this point. And being a Bears fan and watching what Belichick does, I just kind of like sit back and roll my eyes and just like, okay, here we go again. Like no team I will ever cheer for, no matter in 20, 30, 40 years will ever be run this well and be this competent. So that's the thing whenever I see any Patriots move.
And the word, I don't know if I appreciate this or I hate it, is that after any Patriots move, the Pats fans will bend over backwards to justify why it's the right move.
Right.
I mean,
it's like, Brandon Cooks was a scrub anyway. It's like, no, he's like an all pro receiver.
But at the same time, I can't blame them though, because they kind of, it's kind of their obligation at this point to like just have blind faith in their leader.
Mm-hmm. It'll be so nice when Brady and or Belichick are gone.
Tom Brady, system quarterback. I'll leave it at that. Moving to the NBA, the Chicago Bulls are ramping up the tank and shutting down Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn for the season because there's not enough games to get them back into shape because they weren't in shape. The tank is at an all-time high. This is just an obvious way to get around the league, talking to them about tanking again, just to say they're injured and shut them down. But the Bulls, I think, are in the seventh slot right now for the draft. They could probably get as low as five. And that's their full intention right now is to lose as many games as possible. There's going to be some ugly competition towards the end of the season here. I won't watch it, and I'm the biggest Bulls fan I know, so I don't wish watching these games on anyone. What do you think about the tank here, Sam?
I mean, I can respect it. Like, if the league, they've been reached out to the league, what, like two or three times saying, hey, knock it off. And they just keep finding excuse after excuse after excuse. It's kind of like in like middle and high school getting like due dates just moved back and back and back. Or if the teacher's gone, or like it's pretty infantile, but it's also hilarious that in the greatest basketball league in the world, that this just is allowed to happen, kind of.
Yeah, the training staff's basically nudged just to say, like, yeah, like just tell us tell us what we want to hear that they can't go, and we'll shut them down, and we'll be good to go.
Exactly. Yeah.
So don't ask, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And going to a team that's actually competent and will be playing in the playoffs come this April. Kawhi Leonard and the San Antonio Spurs. It seems like there is a rift going on. There have been rumors flying around that it's about a sponsorship deal. And teams have been contacting the Spurs about Kawhi's availability. I'm sure they're shutting down every single offer. But it is there now. And I haven't been alive to see trade rumors surrounding the Spurs in a very long time. But it's weird to see that the Kawhi Leonard, the most quiet, unassuming superstar, seems to be feuding with one of the most well-run organizations in sports. I don't know what to make of it, to be honest.
Well, yeah, and like you said, you just flat out don't hear about like discontented players with the Spurs. Like, I think there was something about LaMarcus Aldridge in the past few years, and Pop just kind of sat him down and said, "Hey, you're not going to do this here." And that, with how respected he is, that just kind of has always flown. But with Kawhi Leonard obviously being the cornerstone of the franchise, this is definitely worrisome for those in San Antonio.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I still don't even know what to think, because I tend not to believe the rumors that come out of San Antonio, because I know they don't say themselves that their entire organization is a steel trap when it comes to information. Yeah, so I don't know if it's still Kawhi being unsure about his injury and not wanting to play, or just kind of sticking to the organization about a financial dispute, but we'll see. It's just going to continue to be speculation until the till they can make a trade on draft day, or they re-sign him to an extension or what. But I'm expecting to see Kawhi in a Spurs jersey next year. Then finals topic here. Joel Embiid fractured his orbital bone last week. And of course, in typical Joel fashion, he was tweeting from his hospital bed while just doped up on painkillers, and following up on his courting of Rihanna, and is now, he said he's now an all-star. Where's the date now? So I respect the hell out of this move. I mean, I think him being high on painkillers while doing it just adds another level to it. But I'm glad he shot his shot.
Yeah.
And put one out to Rihanna.
Yeah, and it's a built-in excuse. It's like, oh, I was in an altered state. Like, it, like that's the, it's not quite the "oh, I was hacked" excuse, but it's definitely more excusable. And for a guy as outspoken on social media as he is, some may even draw comparisons to Sister Jean. Some may. But yeah, I Joel Embiid, like, the NBA to me is all about entertainment. Joel Embiid was born to entertain.
Yeah, and he had multiple tweets out, not just the Rihanna one, saying the the Two-Face picture, saying watching this game high as shit. But yeah, Embiid's entertaining us even without playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I've often said that the NBA is the WWE of real sports.
That works. I'd say so.
But yeah, playoffs are quickly approaching. The race for the bottom of the Eastern Conference Western Conference, I should say, is still very much in the air. We'll see if the Timberwolves, Nuggets, I think Nuggets are pretty much out. And that group of teams bunched around between the 7th and 10th seeds, how it's going to shake up towards the end of the season. And final topic for sports here. The Masters is Thursday, and it has been one of the hottest fields in recent memory. Tiger Woods is still the favorite somehow, because people love to bet on Tiger Woods, even though I don't think there's a chance in hell that he wins today. I don't know what you think, Sam, or wins this weekend. But I'm very amped to nap all weekend while watching this.
More or less, yeah. And I maybe stupidly made a bet with one of my buddies a few weeks ago that Tiger Woods would never win another major. So even though it's awesome to see him be good at golf, I will be vehemently rooting against him in the interests of my pocketbook. So that's kind of all I have on that.
And it's more fun, because every single person is going to root for Tiger. And if you're the guy just vehemently rooting against him, I feel like it's more of a enjoyable experience.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause then like the odds of like winning a golf tournament, even like when you're the greatest ever, like we may see some random nobody pop up and take home a green jacket and never win another major in his entire career. So the kind of how fickle that is, if Tiger gets beat out by like Ricky Fowler or some guy like that, would, I don't know, it'd be hilarious to me. I will say that.
Sam, I'm going to say the odds are in your favor here. I don't think he's going to, I don't think he wants to, he's going to get another major rest of his career. But again, I'm going to love watching this tournament. I don't know what it is, the combination of Jim Nance and the graphics that just go along the sides of the broadcast on CBS. Just do it for me. And it's going to be a peaceful watch while half dozing off in the weekend.
Exactly.
All right, moving on to top five, sticking with tournament. We go heroes and villains of the tournament, basically best figures that came out of the tournament, best or worst, based on your opinion. So Sam is the guest, I'll let you go first.
All righty. So first hero is the high-stepping referee during the national championship. Something people might have missed, so we'll retweet the video from the LMBF Sports Twitter account. But it's basically a guy kind of – one of the referees is running up the sideline into the front court, and he looks like he's, like, running on hot coals or something like that. I think the tweet's captioned, "Why is this guy running like he's the bad guy in Frosty the Snowman?" And it was just hilarious. Second hero for me is the UMBC Twitter account, the guy who ran that. It's some overweight white dude.
Man of the people.
Yeah, exactly. Just getting catty on Twitter during their obviously historic upset of the University of Virginia. Also bring up that point to say that I wasn't quite mad about it, but I was disappointed that people were tweeting a bunch of pictures of golden retrievers when in fact the UMBC mascot is a Chesapeake Bay retriever. So just add to Will actually there, because I grew up with the Chesapeake Bay retriever mix. So I wanted to.
And how good of a boy was that Chesapeake Bay retriever?
It was girl. Sorry to.
Good girl.
Again, so. But she was, I think, my favorite animal I've ever come across interacting. So, yeah.
Rest her soul.
Yeah, and actually that game wasn't the first. I've actually been to a UMBC sporting event before live when they beat Creighton in the Elite Eight in soccer, like my freshman year or something. So that
no
was
kidding.
Wild to see, like, oh, these guys, the guys who look like they have, like, East Bay jerseys. I've actually seen some sport play of theirs before.
Sam, so you managed within one response to be the "well, actually" guy and to be I discovered someone before they were big guy. I think this is the most insufferable answer I think anyone's ever given. Yeah. But continue to the next one.
I'm everything that I hate, a hipster and somebody who's crotchety about stuff that nobody really gives a shit about. Sorry about that. First villain for me is Capital One. And really just because the commercials with Charles Barkley, Samuel L. Jackson, Spike Lee are absolutely hilarious. But I feel like they're picking on Chuck a little too much. Like they're always him saying like the a la mode ice cream type thing, the armadillo commercial. I think even though he went to Auburn and he can't speak the best, I think Chuck's a little smarter than we give him credit for. And the whoever wrote those commercials for Capital One or whatever agency was in charge of doing that kind of got under my skin a bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's like it's like in sitcoms where like the goofy, zany character becomes just completely incompetent over time.
Yeah.
Like they become worse and worse. Like Kevin in The Office goes from just this goofy looking guy accountant to just the dumbest thing you ever see in your life.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's been kind of a slow burn because they've been doing these commercials for the past 3 or 4 years, I think, maybe even before that.
And they've had to top themselves year after year, but you know, maybe flip it on its head sometime and have him correct Spike, because I hate Spike. So
oh, yeah. Like he doesn't add anything really to it. Like I like he's a big movie director that's more famous, I think, for being a New York Knicks fan. And I couldn't even tell you the last movie he directed or project that he took part of, when you have the round mound of rebound, Charles Barkley, who's entertaining as all hell, and then Samuel L. Jackson, who's in every movie ever. Then Spike Lee's just kind of the odd one out.
And that honestly, that one of the commercials hit that. It's like, Charles is famous for being the handsome guy. Yep. Samuel L. is famous for being every movie ever, and Spike's just Spike.
Yeah, the one with Jim Nance. Oh, boy.
That was my favorite one, I thought. But yeah. Is that your five, or was that four or five?
That's only three. I'm sorry.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
I've gotten off the rails here. Another villain, Darren Revell, just to stuff a nerd in the locker. I don't really have enough to say. He tweeted something. He tweeted many things, of course, because he's spamming us all with facts that nobody really cares about. But about, like, Werner got the official ladder, but Fiskars, the official scissor, does not get a shout out on the broadcast or whatever. It's like, I get that it's your bit, man, but, like, just quit. And another weird story of a bone to pick with Darren Revell. I tweeted at him once, and he, like, grabbed one of the pictures, and he usually does the hat tipping at somebody for some, like, Peyton Manning jersey deeply discounted when, like, he wasn't starting for a few games when the Broncos won the Super Bowl. And then he, like, DM'd me afterwards. He's like, oh yeah, sorry, like, I owe you one. And I'm like, oh really, like, cool. Like, Darren Revell, I admittedly, I fangirled a bit. And then like in like the 3 years since, I've like DM'd him like twice and just gotten stonewalled. So I'm very glad that Creighton gave it to Northwestern to start the basketball season, who was Clark Kellogg's Final Four pick, which is absolutely hilarious. So not enough hate for Northwestern, not enough hate for Darren Revell in my heart.
Darren Revell is teasing you. Damn.
Exactly. Exactly. You just, and it's like, I keep taking the bait. That's the thing. Like, I'll reply to one of his tweets and like say like, not now, Darren, or like, shut up, something. I keep just something infantile, which I'd like to think I'm above, like, but I'll do it every 2 weeks, and it's just it. I don't know. I'm gonna have to mute him at one point.
It's petty, but it makes you feel good.
Exactly. Yeah. And then last but not least, this has been a bit long and overblown, but we talked about it earlier. This could be a hero or villain based on what your perspective is. Whoever dug up all those Dante DiVincenzo tweets.
Oh, I think it was a group effort by Twitter.
Oh yeah.
And whenever Twitter gets together to unearth these tweets is one of my favorite times to be on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Just get in to discover just the filtered thoughts of an athlete just thrust into the spotlight. It's just very – it's charming in a way, even if they're kind of dirty tweets.
Right, exactly. Well, and if people have – like, you wonder – like what kind of loser goes through and like tries to search for that stuff. But like, I won't go all Darren Revell on him. Like, I'm very happy and glad that somebody actually went through that effort just because it's so hilarious.
Yeah. It's well worth the searching.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone really holds it against Dante, but a good time for Twitter nonetheless. Yeah. My top five, starting number five, the Samsung commercial with the girl flipping her hair out of the water. And the song, especially the song, I just cringe every time I hear it come on. Sam, you know the song I'm talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Go ahead.
And even worse, it the song was made for that commercial specifically. It's not like they just took an artist's song and asked them to use the rights for it. A person compromised their artistic integrity to just create a song for Samsung.
Yeah. With the express purpose of just getting it stuck in millions of people's heads and having millions of these conversations across the country. But hey, we know what it's for. It's brand recognition.
This artist just had to write a soul crushing song that was titled, I kid you not, Camera Reimagined.
Oh my God.
So put that on their discography. Number four, Jarius Lyles and KJ Mora from UMBC. Jarius Lyles just absolutely went off in that second or in the entire game versus Virginia. So entertaining to watch. And then KJ Mora, the 5'7" defensive player of the year for their conference. Very, you know, just a little spark plug,
mm-hmm.
not to be the stereotypes, just absolute spark plug on defense for UMBC. I thought it was just awesome to watch both those guys seemingly completely undersized and overmatched and just beat one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and yeah, that Moore guy is like 5'7", maybe generous. And he's just darting around, giving everybody troubles. Kyle Guy doesn't know what to do. Ty Jerome doesn't know what to do. The pack line defense was, they basically got shot out of it. And UMBC got to play Villanova for a game, which was really neat to see.
And then number three here, Dan D'Antoni, brother of Mike, with the specifically for his blazer and t-shirt combination. Because I absolutely love the look.
Yeah, the first game was wearing a white t-shirt or something, right? And then the next game, like he like went black or something, and just like not even caring, just tossing. He rolled out of bed. Those were I'm convinced those were like his sleep t-shirts. Tosses a blazer on him. Okay, let's go coach basketball. Like
I guarantee he comes to the gym every day with just wearing a t-shirt and slacks, yeah. And then he just has a blazer hanging up in his office at all times that he just throws on for the game.
Yeah, it hasn't been washed all year, even though that the student managers are offering it to him. But yeah, that kind of thing.
It's like the to pull out an old Catholic school analogy. It's like the blazer you wear to church on Fridays when you have to go to the school mass, and it's just completely dirty. I don't know if you can relate, Sam.
I was a public school kid growing up, but my kind of thing like that is rugby shorts. Is you no matter how bad they stink, no matter what weather you're playing an entire season with rugby shorts, and we had white ones, so you can imagine that all throughout college those got pretty dirty.
Good Lord! All right, number two, having to listen to Chris Webber and Reggie Miller commentating some of these games, just absolutely insufferable. I hate both of them. Reggie Miller more so than C-Web, but just Jesus Christ, I don't want to listen to them ever again.
Yeah, well, the fact that they stuck Len Elmore on the radio, I think, is just criminal. Just because he, like, his voice is awesome, is like just awesome to listen to. He knows a ton about basketball, and the fact that Gus Johnson isn't on the broadcast because of some feud with Bill Raftery or whoever is also kind of disappointing.
Is that the reason why Gus Johnson hasn't been on there?
I saw it on Twitter. I couldn't confirm or deny that, but I don't know. Without any research or fact checking whatsoever, I'll chalk that up to that reason. Just so I have somebody to blame.
All right, we miss you, Gus. And then number one, hero or villain, based on whoever you ask, Sister Jean took the tournament coverage by storm. And then in typical 2018 social media overexposure fashion, got a faction of social media users to hate her. I don't know. She didn't ask for any of it. I'm sure she doesn't even know that people know who she is, because there's not a chance in hell she knows what Twitter or Instagram is. But I just appreciate her for her innocence and just love of basketball, and the fact that she's been with this team. She was a middle-aged woman the last time they won the tournament, which is insane.
Yeah, 45 years old in 1963. Yeah, well, and to kind of like all jokes aside, it's a wonderful story. Yeah, she called herself an international superstar, but like you stick a microphone in front of anybody who's like 70 years or older that's never been in the public sphere, they're going to say some controversial stuff. And the fact that so many people turned on her. Like Kevin Bartman, his I Have a Sister Jean take blog was absolutely hilarious. But both sides of both revering her and then kind of chopping her down were a little overblown. But that's just the state of things gaining steam insanely quickly these days.
So where'd you end up with Sister Jean, though? Hero or villain?
Oh, God. I'd say she's a hero just because I can't call after having gone to a Jesuit school and then Loyola being a Jesuit school, I'd feel bad calling a nun a villain just for that reason only. Like the branding stuff I'm a little sick of, but if her 15 minutes of fame comes when she's 98, that's good on her, because a lot of people aren't even going to get there.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to stick with the same answers since I did go to church. It was Easter on Sunday, so I'm going to stick with not calling a very a nun a villain.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go on to stats of the week. I have two. I don't know how many you have here. I'll start off here really quick. Excuse me. Start with baseball. Joe Panik has hit 3 solo home runs in the season, which account for all of the Giants' home runs this year, or yeah. Giants' runs this year.
Yeah, and the first two were game winners against the Dodgers, and being against Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen, which is like murderer's row of pitchers, not only in the NL West, but in the major leagues. So, yeah, he was, after 2 days of the season, he was in MVP talks, which is kind of neat.
And then my second one here, Kobe Bryant, who has retired 2 years ago, has still played more years in the NBA than he hasn't in his lifetime, 20 to 19.
Holy cow. That's wild. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get those stats with LeBron, I'm sure, too, in the coming years.
When LeBron pays through, he's 48.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole skipping from high school straight to the NBA lends itself to those kind of stats being available.
All right. What do you have, Samuel?
All righty. Brian gave us a laundry list of stuff. I'll get to a few of those. But first off, mine that I wanted to share was Villanova's 3 seniors had 7 points, and that was all season. Not in the national championship game. That was all season. So while they kind of – the narrative around Villanova is well-coached and with experience, obviously they have tournament and championship experience with Phil Booth and Jalen Brunson, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a senior leader on your team to get things done.
I sent that stat in my office today and no one believed me. I didn't have the tweet to back it up. So I just kind of walked it back and I'm disappointed in myself.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Well, I think it was from Villanova's SID, and then Creighton's tweeted that out and I retweeted it. So you've got the receipt for tomorrow if you need to.
Thank you.
Let's see some more crazy Villanova stats. It's been 106 games since Villanova lost by double digits, and that was against University of Virginia. Circles back again. On December 19th, 2015, they won every tournament game by 12 points, and the last 4 were against teams that were all ranked in the AP top 10, which is, again, absolutely wild. And then it looks like, you touched on the Matt Davidson 3 home runs. It's more baseball stuff. Julio Teheran has done something that Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, and John Smoltz never did in a Braves uniform, and that's start 5 consecutive opening days. That's obviously kind of – it's a surprising stat, but night and day considering how dominant and good the Braves were in the 90s when those guys were pitching and kind of how piss poor they are now.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad stat that he's pitched 5 opening days.
Yeah, it's like you could have – so like, I know that Julio Teheran's a baseball player. If you ask me what position he plays or what team he plays for, I'd come up empty.
I swear to God, when you brought up his name first, I was like, I've heard the name, but I thought he was an outfielder.
Yeah, exactly. And then this will be kind of depressing for Cubs fans, but hey, part of the rebuild, got a title anyway. Rich Hill now pitches for the Dodgers in 50 starts after his 35th birthday, has a 2.59 ERA and 281 innings pitched. And that's quite the career renaissance, according to Christopher Kamka.
That guy could not stay healthy for the longest time, and now he pulls this off.
Yeah, it's doesn't make any sense. And, of course, it's on the Dodgers who lucked out with him, who lucked out with Alex Wood. So props to John Hayes for hitching his wagon to them. Well, not even hitching the wagon, but just being a Dodger fan, because that like the – sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
It's true. You have any more?
That should do it.
All right. So we're moving to the tweet of the week. So mine is so Anthony, this is a few parts. My worst tweeter of the week is Anthony Davis in a landslide. He put out a poll earlier last week asking if he should shave his unibrow, and I think the NBA Twitter and NBA fans in general just went insane. And I was on the edge of my seat watching the voting counts come in, and it was 50-50 until I think like 500,000 votes, and it ended up being a yes in a 51-49% vote. after like 600,000 votes came in,
which is insane.
I can't believe 51% of NBA fans want his unibrow gone.
Yeah. Well, and, right. That's his identity. You can't have the nickname The Brow if like The Brow becomes Two Brows.
Yeah. So then after this whole thing and the 51% yes, he posts a video of him with a Red Bull towel draped over his shoulder. And that was immediately a red flag to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is a stupid sponsored ad that he's doing just to get paid, and comes out, makes the video, shaves his unibrow, looks surprisingly good, surprisingly handsome.
Yeah.
He went from like a six to like a hard eight. I'm shocked a unibrow can do that. But, and then comes out April Fool's, of course it was fake. And I'm all for April Fool's jokes, but a corporate sponsored April Fool's joke, I just cannot get behind.
And especially one that's like dragged out like to multiple days.
It was a joke made before April Fool's, which I don't know if is within the bounds of the rules of that holiday.
Oh, and another joke before April Fool's that actually happened to me, not to get us off the tracks, but that's exactly what I'm doing. It is well known by people that are good friends with me that I do not do well with spicy or like hot food. So
as us whites do,
right? My roommate decided who like good cook, like no complaints there. He cooks for us 3 or 4 times a week. It's awesome. Decides to put a habanero pepper in our spaghetti sauce. And like after like 3 bites, I thought like my mouth was on fire. And I like, that's like, again, like an April Fool's joke that happened on what, like March 30th or something like that, which I was just not having any of, but I just, to kind of get rid of the hard taste, I just slathered it in barbecue sauce, which was kind of gross, but it masked it well enough for me and shut up and ate my spaghetti.
Hey, you know what? Maybe the intention was getting he should, you know what he should have done? Given it to you for dinner on the 31st and then had you you being on the toilet during on April 1st was the actual prank.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that would have been more well thought out, but can't have it all.
All right. Well, then finally finishing up with what we're looking forward to this weekend. For me personally, it's going to be the Masters. I'll be watching every day. I have a pool I organize in the office, so I'll have an excuse to be able to watch it and keep an eye on the golfers every day. It's going to be a very relaxing weekend. I'm very much looking forward to the birds chirping at Augusta. What about yourself?
I'd say, I'm going to get to my tweet quick.
I'm sorry. Jesus Christ.
No worries. It's a Dante DiVincenzo one. It's probably the most tame of any that surfaced last night because there may be adolescents listening that
have not maybe problematic of us reading exactly. That
So it's the one that goes from August 2011 to my dad. I'm a pussy now because I don't want to play fucking soccer. Which
you'd think that's the exact opposite of what a dad in America would say.
Right? Exactly. Well, they showed they panned to his parents on the camera, and his dad's like an old balding guy with like a mustache, like old Italian guy. So who knows? He obviously it worked out for him not playing soccer, but that tweet kind of led to, I don't know if it was the first one or not, but that led to the more illicit of the wild tweets.
Mm-hmm. And again, my fault for skipping away for the tweets. I'm fucking up here as first time host.
Very unfair. Very unfair.
What are you looking forward to this weekend?
I get to play rugby. I'm looking forward to that. There's a tournament a couple hours north of here that I'm whoring on to one of my buddies who's bringing a team from Wyoming in. So I haven't seen him in a while. Get to play rugby over the weekend. If I get home, I'll fall asleep, watch some golf as everybody else will. But yeah, that's about it.
All right, we hope that you don't get seriously injured in this game. I can imagine playing rugby after a long time off. It's a little bit dangerous.
I've managed my worst ever rugby injury that I sustained was a broken nose, and I was on the first play of a game in which we only had 15 guys, and rugby you play with 15s. So I stood in the try zone for a bit, like blew my nostrils out, blood running down my face, and just kind of had to stay in. And that's like I had to sit out the next week, but I've been very lucky not to have sustained anything more pressing or I don't know what the word is, but yeah, I'll keep everybody updated.
That's the most rugby move I've ever heard, breaking your nose and still staying in the game. All right, that's the episode. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, whatever else social media you guys are on.
Everything under the sun.
We're on it. I'm trying to do my best Brian impersonation here. So yeah, for Sam and myself, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Oh, and I have a quick shout out.
All right.
Marlon's man was at the Final Four with Mia Khalifa. So
good. I saw that. Just, oh, he's living his best life now. He's freed from the shackles of Marlon Stadium.
Exactly. There you go.
All right. Shout out to Marlon's man and Wiz Khalifa. Mia Khalifa. I just want to be a smart kid, law student, art kid, always on their mind, so if I was ever target, they would blow their own brains out just to mark him. Flows chill, sessions from the Arctic, a regular misogynist, I revel in my confidence and drink on demand. Regular to bottle sips, the paper loves my pencil tips, sangria reminisce, a piece together lines of how puzzling the gritty gets. Confidence is common sense, rhyme against its consequence, shout out to my hometown, DM acknowledgements, mind over money. Matters overall, cold as the winter, a ladder to the fall. Take the circle from the ball, take the clap from the draws, and then you have I and a round of applause. Take the verse, no pause, contract, no clause. Then you have I and a round of applause. Mind's going real crazy right now. Thoughts, efforts, and scribbles I write down. Narcoleptic villains exposing their nightgown. Sleep can't bring change right now. Mind's going real crazy right now. Thoughts, efforts, and scribbles I write down. I know where the cause that in my sight now, but you can't get away right now. I just wanna be a cool kid, never go to school kid, meet with the heads of the battle rap duelist. Rapping cause I wanna be and not because I gotta be. I be in the stars, you can check my astrology. Stimulate the women like Obama did economy, as long as that would net me more numbers than Deuteronomy. Rock the freshest kicks with Louis Vuitton stitch, girl beat always down, call her my bad bitch. I would write sick flows, no beats for intros. Vibes from the crowd, more skin than in vogue. I would travel like gnome to a place I never known. Give me beats and microphone and I would call that place home. Give me beats and microphone and I would call that place home. Mind's going real crazy right now. Thoughts, efforts, and scribbles I write down. Narcoleptic villains exposing their nightgown. Sleep can't bring change right now. Mind's going real crazy right now. Thoughts, efforts, and scribbles I write down. I know where the cause that in my sight now, but you can't get away right now.